Hi, I'm Riley Fessler. I'm a podcast producer here at the DSR Network, which means that my job is to make sure that we have great content and great guests across all of our shows. Our programming is supported by our members, and for that, we are truly grateful. I hope that you'll consider becoming a member to support the work that we do. Members receive an ad-free listening experience, bonus content for nearly all of our shows, early access to episodes, enhanced show notes, and access to our exclusive DSR Slack and Discord communities. Membership is just $7 per month or $70 per year. To become a member, please visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy. Thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent. This week, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. set off an online explosion with a very strange quote about his time spent with Jeffrey Epstein. RFK argued that he spent a lot of time in New York, which inevitably put him in the company of people like Epstein, and, he added, other dubious characters like Harvey Weinstein, O.J. Simpson, and Bill Cosby. Somehow, RFK thought of that as a defense. Everyone laughed about this, but this whole saga has a dark and more consequential side that's gone unnoticed. Kennedy, who's running a third-party candidacy, has a certain type of cultural appeal to young people, young men in particular, that is showing up in polls and could impact the presidential race. And in an interesting way, his bizarre Epstein moment sheds light on why. To explain this, we've invited on Natalia Melman Petrozella, a professor at the New School who specializes in politics and culture, and has lately been writing things that dissect Kennedy's cultural attractiveness to young people. Welcome, Natalia.
Hi, I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Let's start with Kennedy's appeal to young voters. A recent Quinnipiac poll found that RFK gets 22% of voters aged 18 to 34, which is significant. Other polls have had similar findings. You've pointed out that young men are critical here. He gets a ton of positive attention in the online world known as the manosphere. What does all this online discussion of RFK consist of? What do they like about him?
Well, I think that first of all, for young people in general, it's kind of crazy, but RFK as a man in his early 70s is the youthful candidate, right? Or a youthful candidate. So there's that. But I think that for young men in particular, RFK Jr. represents something that is, if you think about it positively, kind of idealistic, right? He made his career as a crusader around the environment. He's constantly speaking out for the noble cause of, you know, medical liberation from big pharma. Like, he has that aspect to him. But I think that also to some young men, he represents a more positive or aspirational version of masculinity than, say, Donald Trump. In what way? Well, you know, RFK Jr. is somebody who got a second chance. He was a womanizer. He had a drug addiction. And look at him today. He's got a beautiful, smart celebrity wife who stands by him. He's got two homes. He's fit. He kind of, I think, stands for, in some ways, a version of masculinity, which a lot of young men probably want, but is not accessible to them, both for economic realities and some cultural ones, too.
Okay, so let's, with all that in mind, listen to Kennedy's quote about Epstein. Ready? Here goes.
So, and you run into everybody in New York. I mean, I knew Harvey Weinstein. I knew Roger Ailes. I knew O.J. Simpson came to my house. Yeah. Bill Cosby came to my house.
So I think we're missing something important about this when we just laugh at it, even though it is crazy stuff. RFK's appeal has two important components that I think are relevant here. One is that he has succeeded in running with the world's celebrities. The other is that he appeals to people who don't like being told their masculinity is, quote, toxic. As you wrote for MSNBC.com recently with Elise Hoag, that viral video of him doing push-ups culturally appeals to those people, and so does his anti-vax insanity. They aspire to rely on their own genetic attributes. They're independent, I guess, and don't need the establishment to tell them to vax themselves. Can you talk about those elements of his appeal? Why do disaffected young people like that stuff?
Well, can I go back to the quote that we started talking about to start with? I think about that. I mean, people are making fun of him because it's so ridiculous. You know, he gets called out for hanging out with like evil guy Jeffrey Epstein, and his answer was like, "You think that's bad? I used to hang out with all these other like sexual predators and et cetera," and that seems like a ridiculous defense. And it is, although I think it is. It won't tank him, I think, for two reasons at least. One is that there's something kind of very anti-woke about it, right? Like, oh, whatever, like, you know, big deal. Yeah, Epstein is creepy, but I hung out with all these kind of swag guys who don't really care about women's sexual autonomy. So there's that. But I also think it's notable that he said, "I used to live in New York. Of course, these were the circles that I ran in." There's something about Kennedy that is about resisting like this old established elites, which is hilarious because he's a Kennedy, right? But that he's the anti-establishment candidate. So painting New York City as this corrupt den of iniquity where he no longer lives is actually totally on brand. That's not a gaffe at all. So I think that's part of it.
Right. And also this goes back to what you said about his success, right? He's kind of succeeded in running with the world's celebrities. And my guess is the type of disaffected young person attracted to Kennedy might hear this quote in a weirdly positive way in another sense. Not only is he running with the global celebrity set, but also he's kind of creeping right up to the edge of all this dark energy that animates these kind of celebrity supermen, right? They feel free to do right? They feel free to do whatever they want because, well, they're supermen. Okay, they got caught and all that, but still, he kind of flirts with this edgelordy type of dark force.
Oh, completely. I mean, this is the Trumpy side of Kennedy, right? They let me do anything I want. Remember Trump's famous line, "Grab him by the pussy." And like, that didn't sink him. In fact, that was very appealing to a lot of men who are sick of HR and feminism and all these things that don't allow them to do that. So I think that's absolutely part of it. And in that way, RFK kind of fits into this Trumpy version of masculinity. But to your other question about kind of how this fits in with his anti-vax sensibility. I mean, this is very much about being kind of anti-establishment, anti-authoritarian, and breaking the rules, and who cares? And let's not forget, he said this on one of these conversation podcasts, which is kind of his sweet spot. That's the realm that he has decided to dominate, and he very much has as a candidate. And those have a lot of male listeners, and it is a world, I think, that stokes a lot of male resentment, and he is very good at playing to that.
I want to ask you about that male resentment, specifically how it's understood and felt by young people, right? So a lot of young people who find him and this kind of flirtation with these dark supermen or whatever attractive are coming of age in a world that, and you have written this, in a world that's looking pretty terrible to them, whether it should look that way or not. The economy, the lack of housing, it's preventing a lot of young people from being independent breadwinners, or so they seem to think. And at the same time, they feel scolded by the woke, or they choose to feel that way anyway. And Kennedy is kind of a heroic figure to those people, right? Can you talk a little more about why that is?
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of talk recently about a crisis of masculinity, and there's also been a lot of kind of eye-rolling at that discourse, mostly from my fellow people on the left. And I roll my eyes too a little bit when we get too bent out of shape about the unprecedentedness of every panic. I am a historian after all. That being said, I do think it's really hard to be a young person right now, and a young man in particular, for all the reasons that you said: economic instability, kind of cultural norms that have rightly focused on the damage that patriarchy is wreaking and has wrought, but sometimes sort of blames young men who are like 12, 13, 14 years old for that, or at least asks them to carry the burden of fixing that. And I think that can be really challenging. So I think that Kennedy kind of appeals to an older version of masculinity, which, by the way, was never perfect. I am not suggesting we roll back the clock, but I think that he plays into that. And he plays into that in a way which is less overtly toxic than certainly a Trump or even like an Andrew Tate, right? That manosphere, which we talked at the top of the show, is a place where there is rampant misogyny and blatant sexism and even championing of rape. And, you know, really, I mean, Andrew Tate is serving time for trafficking. Robert F. Kennedy is not that egregious or that blatant, but I think he appeals to some of those same sentiments among men who have not gone completely over to the other side.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think what you said earlier about his work as a crusading environmental lawyer, I want to ask about that. Undeniably, he did a lot of real work there. I actually, in the old days when I worked at the New York Observer, I used to interview him for pieces about his Hudson River work, and his voice was just the same. But, you know, he was a little more idealistic back then than I think he is now. But anyway, there's also a kind of mythos there that you know, he defended nature from corporate elites, predatory corporate elites. This feeds into the anti-vax stuff, right? Just as those corporate elites pillage nature, they're trying to prevent you from exercising your natural masculine defenses against disease by foisting vaccines on us.
Right. And that's the thing that is really tough about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is that there are these nuggets of kind of good ideas. I mean, for example, you know, this anti-vax stuff is very famous, but his crusade against microplastics, like that's also part of that kind of embrace of the natural world against the industrial world for the environment. And he's right about that. The problem is with him, and you really see this with the vaccines, is that he takes good skepticism or legitimate skepticism about big pharma profits or about the hasty, I would say, vaccine mandates during COVID, and he spirals off into these conspiracy theories about vaccines causing autism, about, you know, the Jewish and Chinese people of the world being spared from COVID. Like that is really dangerous, because on its face, it does seem like that same old idealism that cleaned up the Hudson River. But you follow it to where he takes us, and it gets to a much, much darker place, which, by the way, I think will undermine the institutions of this country if he were to be elected to office, which I don't think will happen.
Right. I don't think so, but he can certainly do a lot of damage. And I want to ask about this kind of darker undercurrent to this, because I think it really heads to an extremely dark place, right? So you talked about his conspiracy theories. One of them is that the government and pharmaceutical companies are conspiring to delude the masses with, well, science, I guess. The globalists are, and there's another one where he talks about the globalists who are conspiring to plan the future for the rest of humanity. He demagogues about Davos and all that. And I think this is sort of where he intersects with the reactionary red-pilled right? In that world, there's kind of a lot of talk about the regime and the professional managerial class, and these things, these elites are supposedly conspiring to inflict woke liberalism and globalism on us. And this is where it gets really nasty, I think, right? The real implication or explicit idea is that these elites are destroying these quote-unquote natural political formations, right? Local community, local attachments, custom, hierarchy. And that's where it gets very dark, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, he speaks in a way that presumes a kind of fundamental corruption of America's institutions and positions him as the one to save us from it. And I think what's really interesting is he's a freaking Kennedy, right? Are you kidding me? Political elites? Like, this is someone from the most storied political family in America. But in some ways, what he's doing is actually saying, well, I actually know this place from the inside. So I'm well positioned to understand it and to save us from it. And I actually think that podcast quote about hanging out with Epstein and Weinstein and all these bad guys kind of actually makes sense with that, right? Like, I know how corrupt this world is. I've actually been there, but I can see things clearly. I can save us all from it. So I actually don't think it was such a gaffe, even though people are understandably making fun of him for it. It coheres with the worldview.
Yeah, I think that's right. I do want to try and get at this notion of natural political formations a little more. The thing about this kind of red-pilled right-wing worldview, right, is that it essentially tells people that there's some sort of natural political formation or a series of natural political formations that the elites and the globalists are trying to destroy, right? And I think you hinted at this in your MSNBC piece. People who start to believe that kind of thing come to see authoritarian or kind of quasi-fascistic political formations as the answer, right? Once you start thinking in terms of natural formations that the globalists are trying to erase and the woke liberals are trying to destroy, you start to think, well, human flourishing kind of comes from formations around gender hierarchy or ethno-nationalism or national community, that kind of thing. And I want to ask you, I mean, isn't that really what we're talking about here? When this is a guy who is trying to tell young disaffected people that the elites are conspiring to rob them of these natural formations where they would be flourishing if those elites weren't out to get them.
I think that's right. And I think it's not a coincidence that, you know, he had a very popular podcast episode with Jordan Peterson, who is a thinker who absolutely positions the sort of natural order of the world that, as you say, has been corrupted by wokeness or by global elites. And that's exactly what he's speaking to. And, you know, to the extent we're speaking about Kennedy's appeal to young men, who benefits from restoring that so-called natural order? Well, the presumption is men who will be back in charge as breadwinners, as the rightful kind of stewards of society and families. And I think, I mean, I do not subscribe to that worldview at all, but I do understand why it's appealing. And I do understand why in a world where it's really hard to buy a house or to get a job, which is going to allow you to save for retirement, much less provide for a family, those traditionally in this society have been male visions. They've been kind of, you know, they've been visions of kind of like masculine worthiness. Are you a breadwinner? Those things are not accessible right now because of some real economic realities. And I think that rather than acknowledge them and, you know, think about policies to fix those things, Kennedy is playing into a kind of like scary fantasy building about what it would be like to turn back the clock and restore that order. Now, of course, that order never existed for everybody. And if it did, it did for great human at great human cost for women and for all sorts of, you know, queer men or people who were excluded from that for other reasons. But that's really not part of that vision. And I think it goes, it's important to note that that Super Bowl ad that Kennedy put out was all about invoking that very idyllic vision of the early 1960s and presenting himself as the one who could restore it.
That segues into what I wanted to ask about next, which is that, look, we all kind of laugh at the idea that a Kennedy is positioning himself as anti-elite, but it actually makes sense in the context of what you just talked about, because he's selling a nostalgia for a time when a different kind of elite, i.e. Kennedys, were in charge, right?
Yeah, I think that's right. And of course, the Kennedy dynasty was not the Kennedy dynasty when JFK came into office, right? And he was an outsider, the first Catholic president, the youngest right. president. And I think that that's what Kennedy is trying to invoke. And he's trying to kind of say, like, that's a sort of more natural elite that I am a part of rather than these old guys who are corrupt in a variety of ways.
The natural elite is an important component of this. I mean, that feeds into the anti-vax mm-hmm. stuff, right? If you're right. a natural elite, you don't need some pointy-headed professional managerial class grunt to tell you that you have to vax up, right? You know what I mean?
100%. And I mean, yeah, and we led that article at MSNBC, and you and I referred to that video of Kennedy pumping up at Gold's Gym, shirtless, by the way. Yeah. And I think that that speaks to all of this, right? He's literally embodying the idea that he is a self-made man and that he doesn't need these medical interventions. And at 70, he can still be bench pressing and doing push-ups. And like, it takes that sort of old-fashioned motivation and self-discipline to resist these simple chemical interventions, which are sort of the easy and the dangerous way out. And I think that that's really important.
The other thing about these sleazy men who he hung out with, right, is that back in this supposedly idyllic time, they wouldn't be in trouble, right? It's all the mm-hmm. woke liberal elites that screwed everything up. And it's because of them that these men can't get away with whatever the hell they want.
I mean, part of this kind of masculine fantasy is a world where men can get away with, you know, boys being boys. And he's lived that life, of course. He was this womanizer who still ends up with this beautiful doting wife who adores him and this big family. And so I think in so many ways, that's appealing to young men too. Of like, oh, like if I could be like that, you know, and just get all the girls and do whatever I want, like that sort of vision of masculinity is very appealing.
Well, we've gotten pretty far afield from Epstein here, but it all kind of holds together in a funny way, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I think that patriarchy has many forms and many manifestations in our politics.
Well, I think we should probably leave it there. We've probably talked about Kennedy far too much for maybe, I don't know, for maybe a lifetime, but hopefully we've covered all the bases already here. Natalia Millman Petrozella, thank you so much for coming on with us.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Folks, don't miss a couple pieces we have up now at TNR.com. A. Brad Schwartz on the lessons that Edward R. Murrow's takedown of Joe McCarthy offers to Trump critics, and Grace Seegers on the White House's slow shift on Gaza. We'll see you next week. You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.